Section 7.3 must not be enacted. It places all power in the hands of a few to the possible detriment of many. Section 8.1b gives them power even over the elected body. Small and part-time farmers must not be ruled out of decisions. In spite of a generalization given in previous testimony here that small operators don't know what they're doing, there are some very intelligent and conscientious people out there contributing their part to the farm economy. Berries taste just as good coming from a $2,000 crop as from a $20,000 crop. And believe me, the thing would get into politics in the election of the governing body who would appoint this very elite group. We do not need the board and one more layer of bureaucracy. That also brings up the use of the word commercial, and it has been already brought up here before today, and the need to define it. IRS considers any income from farm products as commercial and subject to tax. At least I pay tax on my income, which doesn't reach $20,000. Mr. Benner's statement that there are plenty of places out there for small operations is probably correct, but they're not always available. Across the road from me is 80 acres of Weyerhaeuser timberland. It's zone rural residential 5. It's not available for someone to buy to put a small operation on. Mine is not for sale either. Now, if Mr. Benner would just allow people to occupy some of the places that are out there so that there'd be no quarrel. Which brings up lots of record. I believe that parcels legally created and carrying a dwelling right should remain so. In fact, if that kind of a lot of record had been passed originally, we wouldn't have all these hassles that are coming up today. In 1966, my husband and I bought 10 5-acre lots. His insurance had been canceled because of cancer, and of course he couldn't get any more insurance. The lots were to be our insurance. In 1974, they were zoned rural residential 5A. In 1980, they suddenly appeared in the UFU zone by gerrymandering around my property. Next to my property, my son-in-law owns 5 5-acre lots. It is still in the RR5 zone. However, according to the relative regulation, that's the one where if relatives own contiguous lots, they will be considered as one. If they were in the same zone as mine, I could see the two properties becoming one. He could have a choice of giving his property to his mother-in-law, that's me, or divorcing his wife. Suffice it to say that I'm simply opposed to this bill in its entirety. I think there were good intentions there, but it just hasn't been worked out. I'm concerned about the part that would make handing in your income tax to the assessor. I thought that income taxes were to be confidential. I think that we probably just ought to buy a stamp and stamp our income tax confidential and then start dealing them out to everybody that decides they need a copy of them. I'm very concerned about absentee owners, which this bill would create because people couldn't live on their small parcels. I was originally a dust bowler, and I know a lot about absentee owners and the damage they cause to farmland. There are just too many flaws in this bill to try to put band-aids on it. Its passage will be a great step in getting another Measure 6, and I'm quite sure it would go through. It's a far cry from the bulk of the testimony which I heard at the two hearings of the governor's task force, which I attended. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just make a comment. I intend to offer amendments to this bill at the proper time, touch on the areas Governor Task Force recommended, and you might be interested in that. For anyone else, those copies will be available. I just haven't been able to get them out of Legislative Council and get them corrected, but as soon as they're available, I'm going to print up some. And they're rather extensive because I'm talking about a land use court, which takes on 54 pages. I had no idea what it is, but there's 54 pages just on a court. But I just make that statement that as soon as I get it back from Legislative Council, it'll be available. You might want
to. Citizens have the time to respond to it, or
well, I don't know this process that we haven't. We almost bathe ourselves, absolutely, of course, and we've never short circuited that advantage ever. Okay.
Well, I knew you wouldn't if there were time to do it, but
we haven't gotten much done yet here. We'll be around here quite a while.
Thank you very much,
Robert Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Robert Wilson, Route 2, Box 109, Monroe. I'm currently the chairman of the Benton County Planning Commission. I worked with the land use planning in Benton County for several years. Ever since we got LCDC off the desk and finally came up with the goals and the guidelines. And before I respond to the bill, I'd like to respond to Mr. Ashland from the Farm Bureaus. I'm a member of the Farm Bureau, and I have been. For the last 3 years, I've paid my dues, I've gone to the meetings, I've answered their questionnaires. And I never recall a single questionnaire that asked me to set up a panel of five farm members, so designated by a group of experts, to tell me what I can do with my land. Never once. The fact is, most of the things that he addressed at the Farm Bureau, evidently the executive committee is addressing them as a very small group of people that do not represent the farm owners. And I would think that maybe the suggestion could be offered to this committee that maybe the place you ought to be having these hearings are at some of the farm granges, where the man that's actually working the farm, and he doesn't have time to take off now because he's 4 weeks behind the crop season because of the rain, maybe he ought to be listening to you and telling what his feelings are, not the Farm Bureau. I don't think we're being represented by the Farm Bureau. When we go through the attorney fees again, and again from the outset, I'd like to say I think 237 is ludicrous. In the outset, it solves no problems. It creates a multiple of other problems. We start talking a test of $20,000 is a gross income on a 20-acre piece and less before you can put a house on it. I have 111 acres in South Benton County. Surrounding me is 300 acres of EFU land. 300 acres. It's in Christmas trees. It is presently leased to the Christmas tree grower of Mr. Severs for Holiday Tree Farm, or Monroe Tree Farm. He pays $50 to $60 an acre. That 300 acres right now to the owner, 300 acres, does not meet the $20,000 gross test. And you want to apply a $20,000 gross test to a 20-acre plot before somebody can put a home on it? It's ludicrous. The attorney fees, as Mr. Brenner brought out, I don't think there's anybody in the state right now that has anything that they want to argue in land use, no matter how trivial, that can't get all the attorney fees they want from Thousand Friends of Oregon. All you have to do is stand up and be counted. The man that's being hurt is the man that's trying to put a house on a 27-acre piece in a forestry zone and meet all of the criteria by the Benton County standards, and they take him to court and fight the hell out of him, because it doesn't equal a 40-acre minimum. Or a man with an 80-acre piece, they've driven him wild for the last 2 years. He wants to take 80 acres, part of it in wheat land. It's always been in farmland. No houses involved. Split it in half into two 40-acre pieces. Put filberts on 40 acres of it, which quadruples and makes the income from that 40 acres of filberts in 5 to 7 years six times what it's getting in grass seed. Six times. And we spent the last 18 months in Benton County taking it through the court system.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask a question here? Why would you want to divide up 40 acre plots if you could go ahead and punish the, or is he selling it off for a filbert farm? Is that the...
Well, one of the arguments, Senator Day, is the fact that sometimes, in order to improve a section of land, you need capital to do it, just like businesses sell out to get capital. That was one of the reasons. At the particular moment of asking for the split, that wasn't a requirement, except that he had 40 acres of at least to somebody else. He wanted to put in the filbert order. But again, the farm unit remains viable.
I didn't understand why he was splitting up. It was for financial...
It's an option financially.
I gotcha. Okay.
It's called free enterprise.
Well, I understand a free enterprise system. What I was trying to ask you is, why was he wanting to divide it up? And the reason was is that he was going to sell it so that someone else would make that more productive.
If the need was there.
Okay.
Again, I would like to support the testimony of Mr. Larson and Mr. Ramsey on the small woodland. I've got 111 acres EFU zoned. 41 acres of it even approaches the EFU zoning criteria. The other 70 acres is timberland and is growing slowly but surely the timber that is required. It's under the timberland deferral program. The 41 acres is under the farm deferral program. There is no physical way at this time, unless I go out there and plant money, on the 111 acres that I can meet the $20,000 criteria. A small woodland owner, again, the intensive practice grows better trees. It grows better strawberries. It grows better radishes. It grows better kiwis. I can pick 1,000 places in the state of Oregon that a man probably, with intensive care on the 5 acres, can meet the $20,000 criteria. But I can also pick out 1,000 that no matter what he does on 40 acres, he can't meet it. So why pick out an arbitrary figure and put it into any category? You can't do it. It's not standard. I think there was much justification this morning on saying 1 through 4 says nothing. If I have 1 through 4 or 3 and put water on it, it makes 10 times the difference if I don't have water on it. Or if I go out there and give it some TLC, again, I get a hell of a lot more production out of it if I sit in the back porch and watch it. Weeds don't produce very much. On my particular piece, 41 acres, I put every kind of fertilizer known to man, and it falls within the 1 through 4. And I can get one good crop off of it, other than Christmas trees. I can get 2 to 3 ton of hay per acre annually. And hay goes at the top dollar to $60. And most of the times it's 35 and 40. And every year I go out there and put $1,000 worth of fertilizer on it. Every 5 years, I put $1,500 worth of lime on it. I go out there and spend $6,000 to buy a tractor so I can go around it one day a year to take the 25-50 ton of hay off of it. It's ludicrous. But I have a farm operation, and I do my damnedest with it. But to say that I couldn't put a house on that is also absolutely idiotic. And that's what this is designed to do. Prevent any development within the EFU zone. But the secret is the EFU zone does not always include EFU property. Benton County is fraught with 200 or 300 pieces of small acreages that were determined back in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. Most of them were broken off from farm parcels by farm owners and sold to some poor sap for $5,000 or $10,000 to give him some working capital so he could keep 700 acres going. And now somebody says, you can't put a house on it anymore. The very person that's selling it is now trying to steal it back by putting arbitrary factors into the law that's saying, if you don't do something on this, by God, we're going to take it away from you. And it was pointed out, when I own the piece of, or I'm the only farmer next to a 20-acre piece, and you tell me I can't put a house on it, who's going to buy it? I'm going to buy it. But if you think I'm going to pay the $4,000 market value for that 10-acre piece or that 20-acre piece, you're out of your gourd. I'm going to get him $500 or $1,000 or $1,500 or the back taxes when he goes bankrupt. That man must be protected. He's not being protected. We have thousands of pieces of property in Oregon that were legally divided years and years ago. People have spent thousands of dollars purchasing it. And now somebody arbitrarily, and a farmer in most cases, and a very small percentage of the farmers, are saying, I don't want Bob Wilson to come out here in this country and put a house on that piece of property. I think the best thing that ever happened last year was these two houses passed the Right to Farm Bill. This should be thrown in the trash can, and if the Right to Farm Bill does not work, then strengthen it and make it work, because it can work. Mrs. Carnegie and Hector are sitting here telling you that people are walking across my property and they're hurting me. They have the same right to trespass laws as I have to trespass laws. Let them use that right. They don't have to allow anyone to cross their property, and it does not hurt their problems.
I have to ask you to kind of wrap up your remarks. You've certainly got a couple other people we want to get on for.
I know. Again, the hearings officer. We go to great lengths in this nation, and particularly in this state, to elect elected officials. Benton County is predominantly Democratic, and yet we've got two Republican commissioners. I wonder why. Mr. Brenner said, commissioners are not elected to make decisions. The hell they're not elected to make decisions. That's the only reason we elect them. We don't need five board panels of anybody other than to advise them. They have more than adequate means, and in most cases, the laws are being applied. Certainly they're going down the tubes. People are lying, cheating, and stealing. But they're also lying, cheating, and stealing in the Capitol. And it'll never stop, no matter how many laws you write. And a five-member farm panel is not going to create any more honesty out there, except maybe from the non-farmers. I can name people very possibly would be on that panel because of their political strings that are the crookedest people in the county. And just as you pointed out, Mr. Starkovich, I believe it was, anytime I have a direct conflict of interest, I'm going to look out for Joe Blow. And if for any reason, two or three people on that farmland panel doesn't want a piece of farmland, no matter whether it's farmland or not, developed, they'll find a way to keep it from being developed. They're doing that now, no matter how useless it is. The standing. I think we have more than adequate guarantee of standing. We have too much of it. Any nitwit in the county or the state can go anyplace else in the state and raise his hand and say, Bob Wilson's is violating my rights by dividing a piece of land or putting a house on a piece of land. We don't need expansion of it, and particularly to pick out one group of people and giving them standing any place within the county. Totally illogical, other than through sheer greed.
Mr. Wilson, I'm going to have to get another witness after. I think you've made your position on the bill very clear. There's certainly no doubt in my mind.
It's amazing. I came here and sat all day Wednesday, and people have sat here for 20 minutes. I've been here 10. Fine, Mr. Chairman.
Well, sir, I'm sorry.
I know.
And I don't know any other way to do it but to try to give everyone an opportunity to speak. If we let this go on much longer, there'll be four or five people who won't get on today, so I'm doing the best I can. Daryl Garrison and company.
Mr. Chairman, with me today is Mike Judd from Clackamas County and Laura Sickle from Montgomery County. Before I commence my remarks, regarding the issues being discussed today, last Wednesday, Mr. Benner, in his testimony, made reference to a 1980 or 81 study entitled Farmlands in Jeopardy. That study was presented to the Joint Task Force, or Joint Committee, I believe, on Land Use. We submitted a response to that study. That study contained several gross inaccuracies as it related to Yamhill County, both statistically and in the information related, and I want to have our response on the record. Hopefully that study will not keep resurrecting itself before the commission this year. In regard to the question of attorney's fees, as far as Yamhill County is concerned, we have no objection to providing for attorney's fees to a prevailing plaintiff. Since we're the plaintiff in those types of actions, we would like to have an additional opportunity to recover, too. What we object to is the portion of the bill that says that a private plaintiff recovers, we pay him, and then it's up to us whether or not we can recover from the defendant. Counties, as no doubt you're aware, just as the state of Oregon, are in severe financial straits. Give you an example of the financial straits of Yamhill County. Last year, our employees took a wage freeze. This year, we're offering them the same. Now, if we don't have enough money to pay our employees a decent wage, we certainly don't have enough money to subsidize private plaintiffs on the hope and the prayer that we may subsequently recover from the defendant. I would submit to you, given our experience in attempting to recover attorney's fees from criminal defendants, which is probably your worst class to attempt to recover from, we only recover 20 to 22% of those attorney's fees. I'd submit even in the land use category, we would probably only recover about 50% of those attorney's fees. So what you're creating is one more financial obligation. It only takes a couple lawsuits to have a couple $10,000 attorney's fee judgments, and we have to lay off another planner. I'd submit to you the idea of the county subsidizing the private plaintiff, guaranteeing the attorney's fees, would be counterproductive. In regard to hearings officers, first of all, I'd like to say our county used to have both a hearings officer and a planning commission, and we subsequently laid off our hearings officer because we could no longer afford it. But I submit the idea of a farmer's hearings officer is a slap in the face to our present planning commission. Our present planning commission has labored long and hard, has taken a lot of abuse, and now you're saying they can't be trusted with decisions in the EFU zone. First of all, I point out that the land that was divided and sold in the EFU zone was divided and sold by farmers. It wasn't sold by our planning commission. Second of all, our present planning commission consists of one full-time farmer, one full-time forester, one lawyer, one extension agent, one part-time farmer septic installer, one housewife, one realtor, one developer of commercial property, and one retired factory worker. In short, I would submit that our planning commission is balanced. It balances all the interests of all the citizens of Yamhill County, and no one interest group predominates. Secondly, I'd point out about the idea of the farmers, hearings officers. Idea is the appointment of those people still falls within the Board of Commissioners. If you have a bad board, you'll get five cronies. You're not going to get any better decisions just because you set out the occupational standard. If you have a good board, you'll get five good people. And then that brings me to the next point, the idea of taking away from the county commissioners the right to have the final decision. In our county, we have only 55,000 people. And out of those 55,000, 54,900 of them expect to have the right to walk in on the commissioners at any time, any day, any place. That's what they elected them for. They expect those commissioners to make the final determination. We're not so big that the voters are willing to have appointed people make those forms of decisions. The second thing is we utilize appeals to the board for the allocation of resources in land use decisions. We do not have adequate staff to prepare appellate-level findings on every case. Now, one of the most wasteful things that happens in land use is to be reversed because your findings are inadequate. Nobody wins. You've wasted 6 months. You go back and you start over trying to write findings. What we try and do with the Planning Commission is identify the applicable criteria and develop some findings on those criteria. We don't make findings at the Planning Commission level on the credibility of witnesses. We don't make findings at the Planning Commission level evaluating every possible concern. We only address the relevant criteria. If a matter is appealed to the board, that's a sign it's going to go on. And at the board level, we do prepare appellate level findings. They go, instead of 2 pages worth of findings, there's 16 to 20 pages worth of findings. And we would lose that ability, because we certainly aren't going to be able to do 20 pages worth of findings for every EFU decision, yet we would be forced into that position because you'd provide for an automatic appeal. In regard to the standing provision, I would note that the standing provision, one, does not limit... That's why I couldn't find it. Does not limit the actions that they can appeal to an action which took place in the EFU zone. What the provision does in 237 is give anybody who qualifies for farm deferral the right to appeal any decision made anywhere in the county on a land use matter. The second thing it does is it does not limit it to the farm operator or even a legitimate farm operator. Someone who owns and leases out would be entitled to standing under this provision. Third point I would make concerning it is, in my view, it violates equal protection. There's not the exclusion of part-time farmers or non-farmers who live within the same land from a right to automatic standing, in all probability, violates their equal protection, because I don't think you can justify the creation of a separate class. I don't think there's enough differentiation between them, similarly situated persons. Finally, on the question of standing, I think the legislature should face up to the standing issue and either, if you want to eliminate standing, then let's be honest about it and deal with it, or else tighten it up so you don't have as much litigation and it's easier to determine who has standing, but don't create separate classes of standing. Finally, in regard to the idea of vacating partitioning, I have trouble with this bill. In general, I'm not sure this bill is a vehicle for the idea, but I also want to point out I may deviate from other counties in my concern. The idea of giving the counties more authority and more ability to vacate partitions and subdivisions is something that Yamhill County needs. We have a series of what we call fruitland subdivisions created around the turn of the century. And I should explain how these are created. What happened is someone would divide their orchard into 5-acre tracts and sell the 5-acre tracts to some out-of-state person with both a buyback and a management-back provision. It was a form of securities. In short, it was a way to sell land when, in essence, you were just selling 5-acre share in an operating orchard. And we have a lot of it, and they're in prime EFU lands. They're easy to spot because on the map they've got all these public roads that run straight up and down cliffs. They just gridded them. There was never any intention to develop them. Presently, 92, ORS Chapter 92, says the county can vacate a subdivision if it's not developed. However, it's deemed developed if there's been one septic permit, one building permit, or one lot conveyed. What that amounts to is there's not a single fruitland subdivision in our county that we can vacate. I refer to them as time bombs ticking away in the heart of our EFU land. But the second problem is this bill, even when it talks about subdivisions, just says it should be the policy that you can modify it. Well, the right to sell that as a pre-existing lot may very well be a vested right, and I would be reluctant to advise my commissioners to take any action unless the legislature set out a due process system of hearings and criteria upon which we are to make that determination. This bill doesn't do that. It does make some comments in regard to partitionings, but then that comes in the second part of the problem. A partition we granted 3 years ago was not a problem in Yamhill County. We may have a few that could be considered a problem, but a 300-lot subdivision that's a prime cherry orchard that is slowly being sold off in 5- and 10-acre lots to people in Salem, on the idea they might be able to put a house up there, and there's no way we can stop it because it's already been divided and we can't cut it off. That is a problem. But what you do is you say, we shall review the partitionings after 3 years. We don't have the staff, one, to review all the partitionings after 3 years. Second of all, that's putting the cart ahead of the horse, because the partitions aren't the problem, it's the old subdivisions. And I would suggest that if you're going to do anything in this field, and I'm not sure this bill would be the appropriate vehicle, but whatever bill comes out eventually should take a serious look at the 92, ORS Chapter 92, for the purpose of giving counties discretionary authority to vacate and modify subdivisions. And with that authority, at least in our county, we would take action. The reason I say discretionary authority, because in our present financial situation, like all counties, it's a matter of priority of what you can do with limited staff. And the more shalls we get, the more mandated laws we violate. And I think that concludes my testimony on the four issues at this point.
Chairman, Senators, I'm Mike Judd, Assistant County Counsel, representing the Clackamas County anachronism. First thing I'd like to talk about is attorney fees. Daryl's discussed most of that. Just to stress, having a right of recovery is not having the money. We're probably not going to be able to collect a lot of those. Excuse me. The ones we do collect, it's going to be a lot of time and expense. As far as the panel of farmers, you've heard quite a bit about that. I think it's not appropriate to build in a bias, to have one particular interest group, and this is an interest group, making decisions that affect them. As far as the standing, you have basically the same thing. You're picking out a special interest group and giving them extra advantages over other people. If they are aggrieved, then they should be able to prove it. And partition, what you're doing there, I'm afraid, is building in an extra step. That may not be the intent, but the way it's written, it could be perceived that way.